everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is another episode of our coverage of the 2023-24 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual. And most of the time, whenever I do these intros, I have a little something written down about what I want to talk about. And today I have nothing. So I am going completely off the boil, off the dome. Everything is completely organic. So I'm going to do what I usually do and fall back on being a creature of habit by introducing the fellas who've joined me today. Once again, I'm going to start with Ethan. Hello, Ethan.
Well, Gage, thank you for being with us after your long drive today.
Indeed. I was on the road for 6 hours today going to be a recruiter at a career fair, which is not in my job description, but it's kind of fun. So it was interesting. And of course, my compatriot in the North London Derby is with us as well. Reese, we were together this weekend for the Derby and we're together again now. Isn't that sweet? So hello, Reese.
It is so sweet. I'm happy to be here.
And Josh is back with us as well. Josh, it's very good to have you back.
Thanks. How are you?
See, this is what happens when I don't write down stuff. Like, I forget to do the normal bits. I'm tired, to be honest, but that's I'm fair. Raring to go and discuss the NLD and other various things. So, yeah, let's start by discussing the question of the day, which I know you definitely thought about before the episode.
I actually did again.
It's okay.
To Leicester again this weekend. So I'm just going to give my answer immediately. I'm going to ask a question and explain why. Which player, when they return to the club after a move, whether it was for like a friendly or just like a general match, was like that best you saw? Because this weekend I got to see Nigel Pearson come back and Andy King come back to the club. And that was awesome to play Bristol this weekend and see both of them. And Nigel Pearson got like a massive standing ovation and was like tearing up on the sideline before the match.
Was Big Nige playing in midfield? Like, what the hell? What was happening?
He's got like a standing ovation like before kickoff.
Oh, I thought you meant like if they came back and played for the club.
Yeah,
again.
I thought
like,
so too.
And that's or why I was like
Andy like King came on as a sub and like the King power went like ape shit.
Does he play for Bristol now? Or
yeah.
Got it. Okay. See, I was thinking like someone who left the club and then signed for them again and played.
Yeah, that's it.
And I was like, there's like two examples of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, I gotcha. I don't know. I would have to think about it for a little bit. I think, well, my cop-out answer was going to be Gareth Bale because, of course, he came back on loan. But then that doesn't even count because when he came back, he played the entire season with no fans, which is the lamest thing ever. He was back on loan at Spurs for a season, and it was the season where there were no fans. So,
he's other than retired that, now, isn't he?
Yeah. He retired, I think, after the end of the last MLS season. So, in December of last year, I think. So, or maybe just after the World Cup, honestly, I'm not sure. But as far as getting an ovation, I haven't seen too much recently. I mean, Ledley King's always a big one, but he's constantly around the club. Like, he still works for the club, but anytime everyone sees him.
If this doesn't apply to anyone else,
I'll just stick with Gareth.
Answer. Okay, Reese.
My answer is kind of cheating because he wasn't a player, but I think it kind of applies, and that's Arsene Wenger. Because after he left the club, he didn't return for 6 or 7 years, I think. Last season against, I think it was Wolves or... Yeah, I think it was the Wolves game. That was his first time back. And obviously, he kind of had an ugly end with the fans, with the whole Wenger out movement. But ever since, you know, the fans have kind of reconnected with the club and all that. His first game back, they were chanting Arsene Wenger. I forget what the chant was. It was, there's no one like Arsene Wenger. Or there's only one Arsene Wenger. That's what the chant was. And, you know, camera zooming in. He's like, you know, doing the claps. But it was nice to see.
Oh man, this one's tough because I feel like whenever we either let a player go or, you know, have a manager go, I never see them again. Yeah, let alone at the stadium. I got a future one though, because I can't really think of one off the top of my head, is when Tottenham come to Sellers Park. I can assure you that Mila Jedinak is going to have a standing ovation and receive all the praise and everything just because he'd been our captain for the longest time. And he was our captain when we got promoted and he stayed with us for the longest time. Wrongfully sold. To Villa, I think it was the 16-17 season, but yeah, he'll definitely be emotional, I would assume, and get all the praise.
Yeah, I hope they bring him down, because I know in most of the games recently, he's been sitting in the press box, like getting on the radio and being like, oh, yes, I see this tactical thing. Please note this, or whatever they do up there. Yeah. So I hope they bring him down and give him a, you know, proper go of it, because yeah, he is a club legend.
Yeah, even if he doesn't, I'm sure that they'll probably put up a picture of him up on the board and everyone will be clapping and stuff.
I don't know why everyone will be clapping, just tickled me right now, but for some reason it just tickled me. So yeah, I had something else. Oh, Reese, I was just thinking about this when you were talking about Arsene Wenger. Do you think Arsene Wenger is the like number one Arsenal legend? Like,
yeah, I mean,
players.
He has to be. I mean, he was there for, what was it, 24 years?
Yeah.
Something like that. And I mean, like, obviously, the players, you know, the Invincible team is like our, that's our legacy, right? That's like our crowning achievement. But, you know, the season before that happened, Arsene Wenger said in a press conference, I think we can go unbeaten. And he got made fun of, and they made shirts like, you know, Arsene Wenger's a nut house or whatever. And then, you know, in the last game of the season, when we finished unbeaten, he was wearing that shirt under his button up because, you know, he said it first. But yeah, I mean, he totally just transformed the club. He was also there for the new stadium, and he's, you know, there's things you don't know about at the time, but he's come out and said, you know, I say I, speaking as Arsene Wenger, I am him now. I wanted to leave the, I'm not going to do an impression. He's like, you know, oh, I thought maybe I should leave the club earlier, but I had obligations because I was the one pushing for this new stadium and we've taken on debt and I need to get us through, pay off our debt, and then I can leave. So, you know, very classy, was there 24 years or however long it was, won a couple of titles. I can't even remember how many, obviously I wasn't watching for that long. One Invincible. Yeah, I mean, he's got to be. And he has a statue at the Emirates now.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking just between him and Henri. I mean, I know Henri wasn't actually there that long in the grand scheme of things, but, you know, he's still probably the biggest player legend, at least, yeah. I would think.
I feel like when he came back, that probably helped, like, build his legacy even more.
Did he play, like, one game? Or
I don't know, but he came on in, like, an FA Cup match and scored the winner.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's always them two that I think of if I'm like, for some reason, thinking about Arsenal legends or legacy, I guess, which I'm not very often, but you know.
I mean, it's definitely one of the two.
The only one I would think of would be like Ian Wright.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a little before our mental cognizance. I feel like I was going to say before our time, but so is Henri, but he's still kind of in the mental picture, you know, but. Okay. Yeah. Let's, jump right in. That's a nice segue, by the way, from Arsenal to our mystery segment of the week. Now, I texted in the group and said, well, you know, I feel like we should do something North London Derby related. I'm not really sure. Just kind of struggling for ideas. And then Ethan chimed in with a banger idea. So I'm going to let Ethan take over this section.
Yeah. So, you know, when teams like Arsenal and Tottenham play each other or, you know, so forth, there's always something I see. And it's a combined 11 between the two teams. I've seen like professional networks do this and stuff like that. And I think it's just a way to compare the teams and whatnot. So I put forward this and so we made a combined 11 for the North London Derby, not from the game, but just how the teams have been playing this season and what we think of them so far. So we went with a 4-3-3. And what position do we want to start with first? What part of the field do we want to start?
I think we start from goalkeeper and work up.
Okay.
Okay.
So I went with this player just because I think the other team has been rotating with the two. I went with Vicario in goal.
I also went with Vicario for the same reason.
Yeah, just because they've been switching between Ramsdale and Raya. So Vicario has had more time to play and he's looked pretty decent.
Yeah, I also want to put forward the fact that I have not seen him make an error yet, and it's been five game or six games, and I think that's the longest stretch I've ever seen a Spurs goalkeeper go without making an error. Now, that's not to revise history and say that Lloris was a bad goalkeeper, but, I mean, the guy was pretty error-prone on occasion, especially with his distribution. So, and I haven't seen Vicario really make a noticeable error yet, so that's an exciting thing.
So let's move to the defense. Someone else go.
What position are we going to?
Left back.
I went with Zinchenko, but here's the thing is Zinchenko and Unagi play such different positions. Because Udagi, I'm gonna call him Udagi. I know you hate it.
Well, no, I mean that's how he wants it to be pronounced.
He doesn't do the whole inverted thing, as far as I can tell, at least not to the extent that Zinchenko does. And in my mind, Zinchenko's tactical, like what he does tactically for the Arsenal team anyway, is something that I can't imagine us playing without. And I know I'm not sticking all these players in an Arsenal team, but just I am so used to that tactical aspect that I would prefer that. I want to stick with Zinchenko there. But this was one that I definitely thought about because they offer different things for sure.
I also had Zinchenko. This was another that both fullbacks I went back and forth on a lot.
Yeah, I think I was actually thinking about this a lot in my 6 hours of driving today, as you do. And I was contemplating this for both fullbacks because both, I think the fullbacks in both teams, as Reese mentioned, play such different styles. And they're such a key crux of the stylistic profile of the team. And it's funny, Udogi, whatever you want to call him, does invert. He does invert, but it's just the fact that Zinchenko inverts a lot earlier in the phases of buildup. And Udogi instead inverts like in the final stages of his run forward. So kind of arriving in the box kind of thing. But yeah, I went with Udogi. Honestly, what broke the tie was this running bit that I have that he's the best left back in the league. We were going through it while we were watching the game and we were thinking, you know, there's really not that many incredible left backs in the league. Like, because Zinchenko almost doesn't count as a bona fide left back because he's like a midfielder by trade. And then you got the likes of like Chilwell. Luke Shaw was one that Reese put forward if he's healthy, but. So I don't think it's as outlandish of a claim as some would say. So I've gone with the doggy just on that principle.
Because like Chilwell is like in the same boat as Luke Shaw. Like how many games has Chilwell even played in the last season and a half? Probably than eight.
Yeah.
No way. Surely he's
less
played
than
more
eight.
Than eight.
Hasn't he played every game this year?
Yeah.
I'll say so. Less than 10 then.
That's not that much different, Josh.
I feel like that can't be true.
I think he didn't play a lot at the beginning, but he's been playing more recently now.
Josh, he's played 29 games in the last two seasons.
Damn.
I mean, some of those could have been from subs last year too, because I know he spent a lot of time on the injury list. But
well, fun facts, he got injured in their Carabao Cup game today.
Did he really?
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
It's over. It's Jover.
I also went with Udogi. You know, I was thinking of it like, you know, from a stat perspective, but then again, I was like, you know, I can't really do that because, you know, the way the teams are so different stylistically, it's like kind of unfair to compare stats because, you know, I was telling Reese that Arsenal, you know, obviously he knows this, but like, you know, they spend a lot of time getting the ball forward and having it occupy in the ball in the attack. So obviously, you know, stats are going to be, you know, a bit swayed, but I think Udogi has been a very good implement into the first team for Tottenham, so I just picked him. So let's go. Let's do our center back pairings. Let's
speed at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. Who's going first? I'll go first. I've gone for Saliba because I have to. He's, I think, one of the best center backs in the league. And then I've gone for Van de Ven. This was one that changed around in my various drafts, but I settled on Van de Ven. I think part of this, I knew he had been good, but I was kind of leaning towards Gabriel. Just again, stylistically, it was in my mind. And I, you know, he was passing the eye test at least, but this was one I had to go to the stats for, and Van de Ven just blows him out of the water. And I think it's skewed a little bit because I think the first two or three games, Gabriel actually didn't start and only came on in the last like 10 minutes. Yep. But yeah, Van de Ven, even in aspects that I thought Gabriel would be ahead in, like progressive passes, progressive dribbles, that kind of stuff, Van de Ven's beating him on. So.
Yeah, I'm going to – I actually will state that I have the exact same center back pairing, funny enough. I kind of figured this would be a little more controversial than it was, but I ended up picking the two exact same players. Yeah, I heard someone describe Van de Ven midweek and that he moves like a planet, and I kind of agree with that. Like, he just like drifts. Like, I don't know, it looks like he's orbiting the ball somehow. Like, he's crazy. The spaces that he occupies, like how cool and calm and collected he is on the ball. And he's huge. I mean, he's massive, and he glides like he's on skates. It's crazy. I've never seen such a massive individual move with such grace as he does. And he loves, I think that progressive pass, progressive carry stat comes from the fact that he and Romero kind of share this trait where they love an interception and then a break into midfield. Like, they love to pick off a pass and then just carry it for 15 yards into midfield and either blast it into the stands or pick out a pass somewhere. But yeah, I've been super impressed with him. And then Saliba, of course, I think is cementing himself quickly as one of the top center backs in the league. I think especially last season showed that whenever he was out injured at the end of the season, I think it was such a huge blow to Arsenal's title challenge. And he, again, is somebody that I would just use the word like Rolls Royce. Like, he's just like a luxury player. He's somebody that everything that he does looks easy. You know, he just very calm, very composed. So yeah, I've gone with both of those.
I'll chime in real quick because I have the same thing. Obviously, everything about Saliba that we've all said so far is I would agree with. You know, he's just, like you said, he makes it look easy and stuff like that. I was actually going back and forth between Romero and Vanden, and what is it again? So I don't mess
Van
it up.
Van de Ven.
Van de Ven. I almost said Vandenden. Van de Ven. I was going between him and Romero because, you know, Romero had a great start to the season, but wasn't too impressed with his performance in the North London Derby. But obviously, that's just one game. So maybe if we did this down the line, it'd be different. But yeah, I've been very impressed with the new center back signing for Tottenham.
I am the only odd one out. I have Romero instead of Van de Ven. I think I love having a really aggressive center back, and I think Romero fits that really well. Where, like, not being afraid to put in a challenge in the box, I think is really important. But I also think he balances it out decently well with just having a good head on his shoulders at times.
Obviously, and the fact that he's card proof.
Yeah. That's what I told Ethan. I said, I think he has the reverse Xhaka attacks and is sometimes judged a little unfairly by the refs in a good way for y'all. And what I said was, if things had gone as they should, in my opinion, in the first game of the season, he would have missed the next three games. So,
yeah, and then we're looking at Eric Dier starting at center back, and things could have gone very differently. So, yeah.
All right, let's move to right back. Somebody jump in.
I've gone for Ben White.
Reese.
That is all. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. I've got Ben White. I was telling Gage, I think he's a player that if you don't watch all the Arsenal games every week, it's easy to kind of, you know, be like, why is he playing right back? He's not a right back. Why is he there? But he just does a lot of things that people don't always notice because it's not always super obvious. But, you know, his partnership with Saka as well is just fantastic.
Yeah, this is one that I was debating pretty heavily. I almost picked Porro because Ben White's not actually a right back by trade, but I ended up picking Ben White. I think, Reese, you mentioned what you just said actually is something that you said to me during the game, and that kind of swayed me a little bit. And I think just, to be honest, White actually provides a lot more in terms of defensive coverage. I think Porro is oftentimes a defensive liability. Now, I will say he's been pretty good defensively this season, but last season there were a lot of instances where he was a massive question mark in terms of his defensive abilities. So I think Ben White definitely covers that. And just the fact that I have Udogie on the other side, he's, you know, considerably more of an attacking option. So I figured I'd go with White to balance out the numbers and the stylistic play of my imaginary team.
I am, once again, an odd one out. I have Pedro Porro. I like what he can do going forward. I'm not saying Ben White can't do that, but in a system where Ben White wouldn't have Saka, I don't know how good of a right back, or like not necessarily just Saka, but like having a very good winger, I don't know how good of a right back. Like defensively, obviously, he's very solid just because of sliding over from the center back role. I don't know how well he would do in that right back role if he was the one having to progress the ball as far forward as some right backs like Pedro Porro has to do.
Your imaginary defense is the most attacking defense I've ever seen in my life. Because you have Romero, you have Zinchenko, you have Pedro Porro, you got all the O's.
We're winning 5-4 every game.
Yeah.
I went with Ben White, so Josh is the odd one out again. I think that Ben, you know, obviously they're both good at both, but I think I'm more impressed with White's defense than I am with Pedro Porro's. Not to say that he's not been good this season, but yeah, there was that clip going around that Ben White like misplaced a pass and then he immediately made up for it. I know that made the rounds on Twitter, but I still think he's a very good safety net in the defense.
The reason that clip was so funny is because Reese, I don't know if you know the one I'm talking about. I'll have to send it in the
group chat. I definitely do. I don't know why it wasn't just clip. Why didn't they just show the recovery? Why did you show him giving the ball away?
Well, he gave the ball away, and then not only that, he recovers and then passes the ball to no one when he has like.
Well, five no, or he, six passed the he passed it to the goalie.
Not really. He passed it into outer space, and the goalkeeper had to run out and retrieve it. Like, I'm not listening. The thing is, he was under no pressure, so it was fine. I just thought it was a really weird clip to post. Like, I don't know. So,
it was his PR team is not doing him any favors.
It's like the Emerson Royale comps from days past.
It's like, I swear he's good. I swear.
It's like one of those videos where it's like blank highlights. And then and instead of showing a highlight, it just goes, thank you for watching.
The Mudrick all goals for Chelsea.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, that's all the defense. Let's move to the midfield. I'm interested to see this one because I feel like we're not going to agree.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go first.
Let's do number six, because this is the one where we're going to fight. And Josh, I want you to go ahead.
I am going to go with Declan Rice. And I feel like I'm going to cause a large argument. And I
explain yourself.
So I think he's very solid defensively. And I think when he goes from being the main man in a team to not having to be the main man in a team, it allows him to not have as much pressure as he's had the past two and a half seasons that he was at West Ham. And I just like, he has a very good balance of knowing when to get forward and when to stay back. I think it's that's kind of the big thing that he balances out. When you see the other two I have in midfield, it makes sense why I pick someone who I know will just like sit back and just let them do their thing.
I actually have Bissouma.
What? I can't believe that. That's crazy.
This is one of the ones that changed in my drafts, in my multiple drafts. And I'll tell you why. This one purely came down to statistics because purely for number six, in terms of statistics, Bissouma is winning in the head-to-head. He is better defensively this season. He is better offensively this season. I think, you know, physically there's a difference because Declan Rice is massive. That's like the one difference, right? But I think come to the end of the season, I will say Declan Rice. And this is also not one that I was like, oh yeah, obviously Bissouma. I was internally having a fight with myself. But at the end of the day, I think The other thing to note is that they are both number sixes, but I think Declan Rice is a little bit more left out to dry than Bissouma is in terms of the midfield, because partnering Declan Rice is either Fabio Vieira slash Declan, or not Declan Rice, Fabio Vieira slash Kai Havertz and Odegaard, who are spinning their entire game up the pitch. So he's having to do a lot. And I've been impressed. This is not to say he's been bad. I am perfectly happy with how Declan Rice is playing. I think purely in the head-to-head, Bissouma takes it for now.
Well, I was planning on, like, you know, really hamming it up and kind of, you know, obliterating Declan Rice on behalf of Yves Bissouma, but I guess I don't really have to if you're not going to pick Declan Rice. I was just going to say, I've never seen that fraudulent carbohydrate receive the ball facing the goal.
Fraudulent carbohydrate is crazy.
Bro has not ever received the ball while facing the goal. That's the thing that kills me. I think on the eye test, like, Declan Rice is somebody who, and to be fair, your point about him being left out to dry a lot more does kind of add context to this, I guess. But I feel like he drops so deep to receive the ball and build up. And maybe it's kind of a tactical advantage for Arsenal at times because of how high the line is and because of the fact that the center backs play 10 yards inside the opposition half in possession. But the thing that Bissouma offers so well, and the fact that I'm actually really scared for when he leaves for AFCON, is the comparison always gets thrown around to Moussa Dembele, but I'm going to tell you why. And that's the fact that he can receive the ball with three players closing down on either side of him and facing his own goal and find a path out. And he just is so adept at breaking the press. And I agree that Declan Rice is better as a destroyer number six. But I think as a deep-lying – well, again, this goes back to kind of stylistic differences between the teams, because I think Declan Rice, because he's the single six at all times, is required to be a destroyer a lot of the times and shield the back line. Whereas Bissouma, you know, Sarr is technically an eight. I mean, but a lot of times he'll drop back in out of possession and create a double pivot with Bissouma. And I forgot where my train of thought was going with that. But in the Postecoglou system, he's a lot more of a deep-lying, I don't really want to say playmaker, because he's not really a creative passer, but he's more of a creative, he opens up opportunities for other players to be creative, if that makes sense. He breaks the lines, stretches the space, that kind of thing. So
I will defend Rice, even though I didn't pick him. I think this myth that he isn't able to, you know, receive the ball and find his way through a press is just completely incorrect. I don't really know where that came from. I think maybe it's because he doesn't do it that often, but it's because it's not asked of him that often. When it's asked of him, he does it. But I mean, you kind of mentioned it, but the thing is, like, you think about all the players that are ahead of him. Obviously, all of our attack is ahead of him at all times. Ben White is often ahead of him because he's making overlapping runs. Zinchenko drifts into midfield, but is still playing higher than Declan Rice is. Both Odegaard and Havertz playing further up the field. So when Declan Rice receives the ball, it is either, you know, when we're recycling it, playing, you know, backwards, kind of restarting possession, and then he's, you know, receives the ball and is just tasked to distribute it. Or it's like you said, when he's making some kind of recovery tackle when we're on the press. So I think this idea that he can't, you know, make progressive dribbles and figure out how to get through multiple players isn't true. It's just that it's not what is asked of him most of the time.
True. I will say, though, probably the downside of him having that massive physique is that he kind of reminds me of an aircraft carrier on the turn, which is not necessarily a bad thing. And again, I think that's why he drops deep to receive, so that he doesn't have to do that. But I think maybe if I saw in context evidence of him breaking through the press, which, again, stylistically, you can argue all day that maybe he doesn't have to do that. But I think just as far as the eye test is concerned, I'll take Bissouma all day.
This is funny because I thought this was going to be like the main talking point but Reese ended up agreeing with Gage. So this is, I sent them a picture earlier, and it's that picture where like the parent, it's like the cartoon where the parents are walking different ways and their kid is like holding on to each parent, like, and he's like about to fall into the pit. I thought that was going to be me, but yeah, I ended up going with Bissouma just because I, you know, obviously his stats are better, but you know, I think both have been vital to the teams and, you know, taking it forward and, you know, stopping it when it gets too shaky with the other team going forward. So, but yeah, I went with Bissouma for all the reasons that everyone else who picked Bissouma had mentioned. Let's carry on. I want to know y'all's other two CMs.
Mine directly defends picking Declan Rice as like the destroyer six. As
I feel like Madison, these are shoe-ins.
I picked Madison and Odegaard.
Yeah.
And I think just having someone who can cover it by themselves, that's why I picked Declan over Bissouma. But Madison like speaks for himself when he's in like a team with like good players around him and like has money funneled in. Like it's obvious like how good he is. How he should have been a shoo-in for the England team the last 4 years. And then Odegaard, like, his reawakening since getting to Arsenal is amazing, and he looks great and continues to look great this season.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. Obviously, I think all of us have them. They're both phenomenal players, both gotten on really great deals as well. So it's just everything about them. You know, Madison brings the feel-good. He's like kind of a... It brings this quality to the Spurs team that everybody just instantly loves the guy. Odegaard kind of has a similar effect. Also the captain of the team, right? So they're both just so important. Even Madison, just only recently joining, is already so important to the team.
Yeah, I think Madison is signing of the summer so far, and I thought Odegaard was my player of the season last year. So I think that just kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah. Those were the two positions that I thought we would all agree on just because of how important they've been. So let's move to the attack, and I'm really excited for this because I think we're all going to be pretty different some way. So let's start off with, let's do the left wing.
I'll go first again. I have Son, and like obviously could have put him at striker, but I think with what the other team brings going forward, a striker, I think it makes perfect sense to put Son out at his like natural position on the left. There's not much you can say about Son. Like his stats speak for themselves, and what he like culture he brings, and just like the energy he brings to the club is huge.
I'll go next because I have Son there as well. I was you know back and forth between if I wanted to put him at left wing or at striker, just because you know. Naturally, he's left wing, but he's been playing striker this season. But I've been more impressed with the striker options than I have for the left wing options. So I ended up going Son at left wing.
I've got Martinelli at left wing. I was thinking of Son more of a striker in this sense, so he's just removed from this position for me. And so... honestly, the players to choose from at that point aren't that deep, right? It's Martinelli, Trossard, Solomon, Perisic, maybe. And I think Martinelli was just the easy choice for me there. He's phenomenal. I know he just got injured, so he's going to be out for a bit, but I just love the way he plays. I think his decision-making is pretty good. He is just absolutely... Gage uses this to describe Roope Hintz for the Dallas Stars all the time. He is electric on the ball. He is just so fast. And, you know, and we bought him for nothing from Brazil, for literally chump change. And yeah, I mean, I mentioned it before. Last season, had he not gotten injured, he I believe, tied the record for most goals scored by a Brazilian in the league with Bobby Firmino. At 21 or however old he is, and he was injured for, you know, the last month and a half or whatever, however long it was. So yeah, I think he's just a phenomenal player.
Yeah, I was, but I kind of, this was a little bit of the position that I struggled the most with, because like Reese, I kind of took Son out of the equation because I knew he was going to be elsewhere. But like the other player I would like to pick in a forward role is like, I was thinking, well, you can't really pick Kulusevski because he's on the right. Like, so I was struggling between Martinelli, Trossard. I thought about Perisic, but not for too long. So I ended up going with Trossard. I think just purely on the basis that this season, I think he's had a greater impact so far, which is largely due to Martinelli's lack of fitness so far. But I also think that we saw the impact of Trossard as a super sub last season. And I think that's actually a super sub, super valuable skill. And so far this season, he just impresses me with how direct he is. That's what I'll say. Like, he's such a direct player, always thinking of going to goal, never really has anything else in his mind other than scoring or creating chances. So I'm impressed by that. And Martinelli, not to disparage him in any way, just that this season I haven't really seen or felt his impact yet, which, again, there's mitigating factors, but that's why I've decided to go Trossard.
Yeah. At one point I was talking with Reese and you were thinking about Solomon at one point.
Yeah. The main reason was because of Martinelli's injury, but then I was like, well, let me just check. Let me be fair and see, even with the injury, what their stats are lining up. And Martinelli, from a pure output standpoint, is higher right now. Actually, they might be tied. Does Solomon have 2 assists this season?
Well, okay, yes, but they're both for Son, and a lot of times assists to Son are made up because he's
Martinelli.
A freak.
Yeah, Martinelli also has 2 assists, and then I use that side I was talking about to see the advanced analytics head to head, and Martinelli's actually outperforming Solomon there as well. So I ended up just going with Martinelli there.
Yeah, and it's not to say they weren't like nothing assists, but Son is just the most clinical finisher in history. Yeah. So you don't have to work that hard to make him score goals. So yeah.
Nice. Let's go to right wing. I feel like we probably have some similar.
Yeah. Issues. I mean, Bukayo Saka, one of the best wingers in the world. He's 22 from the academy. I mean, I just love the guy so much. He's our star boy. That's it.
Yeah, I picked him as well.
Yep.
I've actually gone with Brennan Johnson. No, I'm kidding.
I know you're lying right now. You're lying. No,
I've gone with Saka, yeah, of course.
Johnson.
So yeah, don't have much more to say. I like to he was on my nerves because of the whole thing of him doing Madison celebration, and I was trying to come up with bad things to say about him, and literally the only thing I can think of is the fact that he missed the penalty in the Euros. That's literally the only thing I can think of to say about him ever.
You immediately said it, and then you answered yourself. I didn't even say anything. You were like, I don't even think Madison was in the team.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't in the squad. So, no, he's hard to dislike. I'll say that. Like, there are some Arsenal players that I have no difficult time absolutely hating, but he's not one of them. I actually like him. I think he's a good guy. So, and he's obviously an incredible player. So,
right. Let's go to the last position. Let's go to the striker.
I got Son.
Oh, yeah.
I think despite how clinical he is, there was actually an argument in my head for Jesus purely on the basis that I think, especially with Saka, I think, and Martinelli, I think even when Jesus isn't as clinical as he should be, he just improves the front three by existing. I think he's a fantastic dribbler, making really great runs all the time, opens up space. So he does a lot of other things besides score goals. But at the end of the day, you want your striker to score. And Son is scoring for fun. So I pick Son at striker.
Yeah, he's actually a freak. Like, I think I used to talk about how good at finishing Kane is, but if you look at the advanced analytics, like, Son is the player that I think I don't know if he's number one or number two, but he's in the top two of players who score from, or what am I trying to say? His goal to XG ratio is the highest. Like, he scores from positions of ridiculous XG that he shouldn't. Like, he just scores lots of goals that he has no right to. Like, look at the first goal that he scored in the North London Derby this weekend. Like, there's one place he can make the run, one place he can finish the ball to score, and he does it, like, impeccably. So, yeah, and on top of that, just the fact that, you know, this obviously doesn't really go into decision-making in terms of the, you know, combined 11 quality, but what he brings as the new club captain off the pitch, the fact that he's just such a beloved member of the squad, beloved member of the game. Like, I just think, you know, personality wise, he brings so much as well. I'm not having Jesus anywhere near this team, unfortunately. I think I need to see him play consistently before I can form an accurate opinion, because right now my opinion of him is not that high.
He's been injured, which I know, all the time, right?
Yeah.
But I will say, in the one game that he has started this season, which was the Champions League, or he started in North London Derby as well, but not at striker, at winger, right? The one game that he has started at striker, which was the Champions League game against PSV, he was phenomenal, like unreal. So like, when he's fit, he's so good. He's just not fit ever.
I saw someone say that he looks like the gingerbread cookie from Shrek. He does. On Twitter. Which is hilarious. Eyebrows. It is the eyebrows.
I did go with Jesus just because I already have Son on the wing. I think even though like the injury record is there, the goal scoring record when he is fit is there. I think, and like I was between him and Nketiah just for striker because I moved Son out. They have the exact same goal scoring average or goals per game. So I would trust Jesus significantly more than Nketiah.
Yeah, I also had, or not also had, but I, since I had picked Son for left wing, I ended up going with Nketiah. And I was also between the Jesus and the Nketiah thing. But obviously, Jesus has been, you know, dealing with an injury. Nketiah has been pretty decent, even though I think in the long term, Jesus will have more of an impact on the attack. And I was telling Reese that I think that when Jesus plays, that Saka is able to shine more. So, but yeah, Nketiah has been pretty decent so far this season.
I think that's everyone, right?
I'll tell you, there was a universe before my final draft where I had 3 Spurs players in my combined 11.
Who was it? Can we?
It was Vicario, Van de Ven. No, Vicario, Madison, and Solomon briefly. Or no, brother. Son. Sorry.
I was going to say brother.
Solomon made it to the second draft and then I dropped him again. No, my 3 was Vicario, Madison, and Son.
Yeah. I think there's a few like undroppables. Like I think Son, Madison, Odegaard, and Saka are like the four that are absolutely stapled to the team sheet, like no question.
I'd probably say Saliba too.
Yeah, I mean, I could say, yeah, you're probably right, but I could see an argument in a world where it's, well, no, you're probably right. But yeah. So I think the other positions are kind of interesting, especially the fullbacks and the attacking combination. Those are kind of the most sliced and diced, I'll say.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a fun little segment. I think, you know, going forward, we might do that again with like, you know, the likes of like when Chelsea play United, I feel like they're both freakish enough where we can see.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. So I don't know how soon that is, but.
Combined 11, but we're trying to make the worst team possible.
What a sight that would be. Yeah, whenever that comes up, I think we'll do that in other.
Is it crazy that Johnny Evans might be in that 11 right now based on his performance against Burnley?
Yeah.
Like I'm just
he's kind of their best defender.
Yeah,
he wasn't bad before he had plantar fasciitis, which my 50-year-old mother has.
Listen, I don't think he's ever been a bad player. I just think it's crazy that he's starting for Man United in the year of our Lord 2023. I just think that's crazy.
I mean, if he wouldn't have got plantar fasciitis, they probably would have bought him from us for like 70 million.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, let's use, okay. I kind of ruined the segue by talking about Johnny Evans, but I was going to segue the mystery segment into the North London Derby that actually just happened. So we can go over that a little bit. Of course, we were, well, Ethan, Reese, and I, the 3 that still live in the same state, we're all together for it. So sorry that you had to miss out on that one, Josh, but it was a fun time. I think it's interesting in the fact that this is the first North London Derby in a long time where I think both of us were pretty satisfied with how we played. I mean, I know you might balk at that a little bit. Would you say overall you were satisfied with how Arsenal played in this?
No, I don't think we played up to our best, and I'm definitely disappointed. I think maybe a draw is deserved, but the way it happened makes me upset.
Yeah. And I think I, in retrospect, like I was watching the, when we were watching the game, especially in the last 10 minutes or the 10 minutes that were added on, I was kind of bricking it a little bit just because of the constant corners, constant pressure coming in from Arsenal, but none of them really ever threatened to score or to, y'all didn't really threaten to score from any of them. And you brought up a good point that by the end of the game, Arsenal hardly had anyone on the pitch that could score. So yeah. I feel like I told you, I felt like we escaped with a point. And then I kind of I revised my own opinion later and thought, well, you know what? I think Spurs actually played well. They took it to Arsenal. They didn't play with fear. They did create some chances. Maybe they gave away a few that Arsenal should have capitalized on. But overall, I mean, I think I liked the spirit that Spurs played with. And I agree that I think a draw is probably deserved. I was kind of hoping that we would score from the corner in the 100th minute just for pure shithouse factor. But
I could see why Reese is feels a little bad about it, because I know, you know, going ahead both times to then, you know, give away a goal like pretty soon after, I think is rough. And then kind of just, you know, trying to get a desperate goal there at the end with Tottenham being solid at the back was just tough.
Yeah. There was just a couple factors that it just made me left a little sour taste in my mouth. And like you mentioned, we score first, then we concede immediately after. It's like, just stay focused, guys. Like that is purely just turning off your brain for a moment, brain fart. Like what's going on? Score again, take the lead. And then Jorginho, terrible mistake. And I know mistakes happen. I'm not mad at Jorginho. It happens. I get it. But it's still annoying.
Yeah.
And then, you know, combine that with a couple, like Gage was saying, something I wrote in my notes, I thought our press in this game, that was something I was happy with. I thought we pressed really well and really intentionally. I think a lot of the mistakes y'all made were entirely due from the press. And I don't think, maybe a few were individual errors, but there was quite a few mistakes or turnovers and pretty high up the pitch in y'all's attacking area. And I think it was from the, you know, the press kind of forcing y'all into bad positions. But we have to capitalize on any of those chances. The one I think of is the Jesus one. Like, at least get the ball on target. That was unbelievable to me.
Yeah, the thing that kept happening was that trap. Y'all would set the press trap for Vicario to lay it up the middle, usually to Madison instead of Bissouma. Like, if that's Bissouma, I think it works. Although he did get caught once. But especially given the fact that it's up the middle to Madison, and that's actually the one where that Jesus chance came from. It's the one where he stripped him of the ball and then, you know, kind of barreled in. I will say, I mean, yeah, there were mistakes from Spurs, and I think most of them were derivative of Arsenal just pressing really well. But I also was super impressed with how Spurs played out from the back. Like, normally you would see that lead to goals, and maybe it could have on another day. There were a few chances. I think what was the one where Fabio Vieira was free in the box and it should have been squared to him?
Yeah, it was Nketiah had it. You can see him look across, and right when he looks, he's kind of in line with the Spurs defender. And then right as he looks back at the ball is when Fabio Vieira kind of breaks through. And, you know, at the time I was like, man, he's got a pass there. But, you know, looking at it in slow-mo, you can kind of see his thought process. It's like, he looks over, you're like, oh, he's not really open. You look back down at the ball right when he's open. So it's kind of tough, but yeah, that one, you know, if he passes it, it's a goal. That's just how it is.
Right. Yeah. And I'm impressed by the fact that I don't shit the bed every time Spurs try to play out from the back. Like, I think there are more occasions than not, even in this game, that you can go back and look at where Spurs successfully played out from the back with very little incident. And I think just the confidence that they have instilled in them, like, that's something we never would have seen over the last 3 years. So that's, you know, totally, totally surprising. And I think it's a good sign for us going forward whenever we play other teams. Like, Reese and I were talking about, like, we've kind of played crap in the league. Not like we've played crap, but we've played against crap in the league so far up until Arsenal. And so we didn't really know, like, there was a lot of suggestion on Twitter that if Spurs came and tried to play ball against Arsenal, like, they were going to get pounded, which I don't think was the case at all. I think that, you know, the footing was actually pretty level for the most part. It was pretty obvious that Arsenal are a team that are 3 years into the project and Spurs are a team that are 6 games into the project, right? Like, I think just a lot of what you're talking about in terms of organizational structure, like how fluid your press is and how everyone knows the trigger by heart. Like as soon as they see it, everyone breaks. Like, and I think that kind of thing is something that Spurs just need time to catch up on. I think it's just clear that Arsenal have had so much more time. So yeah, I think the Jorginho mistake, like I feel a little bit like ball doesn't lie on that. Not that I think the Romero one was shouldn't have been a penalty, because I mean his arm is way up in the air. Like, and we were talking about it, the fact that Romero had one against United that was exactly like that, that wasn't given. But Reese made the point that it was right inside the 18-yard box versus this one, which was in the 6-yard box. So that does kind of make a difference. But when I say ball doesn't lie, I mostly feel like in that instance, like, I don't really know what Romero's supposed to do. Like, it's just one of those unlucky penalties that happens. Like, I don't really think he made a mistake. I don't blame him for that penalty, you know? And so I was happy to see that we went right up the other end and scored. So yeah, the one I want to come back to, by the way, because I jokingly, we kind of joked about it during the game, but I think that Nketiah tackle on Vicario is a red. The more I watch it, the more I think that's a red.
I don't, but I've seen that sentiment on Twitter a lot.
I just think, like, if the reason it's not a red is because he doesn't land with his studs, but like he's still flying into the tackle. The ball is like, once he starts tackling, the ball's not even in the frame. Like, I just think it's a ridiculous challenge. And if he hits with the studs, it could be a leg breaker. So yeah, I just think that's a red, the more I see it. And I probably entered into my Spurs echo chamber with that one, but
I mean, you're saying if he hits with his studs, it's a red. He didn't.
But his studs are knee high. How is that not endangering
the
safety of an opponent?
They weren't knee high, but okay.
He hits with his trailing leg, like he goes flying. I mean, it's because he's frustrated. Like, it's clearly a tackle born out of frustration. So, like, I don't understand how it's not endangering the opponent.
I don't think he was knee high. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. and I think at the time you didn't think it was a red, and I think maybe going back and watching it in slow-mo 50 times it changes your mind, but.
Sure. Yeah. And I appreciate that, but I do just think like what I really noticed was the fact that the ball had been gone for 5 seconds before he makes contact with Vicario. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's not trying to slide tackle the ball. He's sliding to have the ball hit him. Right. And that's why it comes in late. This is not something out of frustration. I don't think, it was just poorly timed.
Oh no. I think that was out of frustration. Like,
I mean, he does it all the time is the thing. Somebody out, but that kind of slide tackle, trying to just,
sure.
It's just a part of the press. And he's scored goals like that, where he just slides in and the ball hits him and deflects in. So, I mean, this is entirely intentional. He just misses it a little bit.
Sure. Okay. I take your point. I mean, if he does it all the time, then I take your point, but I don't know. I kind of felt like it was born out of frustration a little bit, just purely because of how late it was, but either way, it's neither here nor there, really. I don't think it changes the outcome of the game that much, because by the time that happened, like, Madison and Son are already off the pitch, and Johnson, who are probably our three best forward-thinking players on the day. And by that point, I mean, Spurs never really looked like scoring again after they came off. So I don't really think it changes the outcome of the game, but I did just want to bring it up. I don't know. I don't have too many other thoughts. I was impressed by Brennan Johnson. I thought he works really hard. He's very direct. I do think, and I've seen some people come out on Twitter out of the woodworks now, some Forest fans saying one of the criticisms of him is that he struggles to generate power on his shots sometimes. And I think we saw that, you know, especially on that one where Raya made the outrageous diving save. You know, if he powers through that, I think it's a goal.
You know what my dad said to me, which I thought was interesting, because a lot of Arsenal fans are using it to gas up Raya, was when I brought it up, my dad's immediate reaction, because I actually had some criticisms of Raya, which my dad agreed with, which was that I didn't think his distribution in this game was very good. But we were talking about it, and then I brought up the save, and I was like, yeah, but that save was amazing. And my dad immediately goes, I think Ramsdale also makes that save. And I think he distributes better. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of think you're right. Obviously, there's other aspects of their game that are different, but I think a lot of people are using it to gas up Raya and kind of justify leaving Ramsdale out when it's a lot closer than people might think.
Yeah, which is interesting because Raya's, well, is the whole point of, well, what is the point of bringing Raya in to the team?
I don't know.
Because he played Champions League.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to equal out and they're going to start splitting game time, like I mentioned last episode. I think for now, Arteta's trying to catch him up and play him a couple games in a row to both see how is he looking tactically, and also see, you know, can he generate, you know, a string of games where he's keeping clean sheets, which he did. He had two games, kept clean sheets, but didn't have much to do in those games either. So I think it's going to end up equaling out, and I think they're going to split game time, and I think that's the point. But right now, it's really hard to tell because I thought, yeah, well, obviously he played Champions League, and I was like, or he played his first game against whoever.
PSV. No, wait.
No, but,
no, Everton. League.
Yeah, he played his first game against Everton, and I thought, Everton, yeah, it's because he's going to play Ramsdale in Champions League. Plays Raya in Champions League, and I'm like, well, maybe he'll play Ramsdale in the Tottenham game. Plays Raya in the Tottenham game. Plays Ramsdale today in the Carabao Cup. So I think it's going to change soon, but yeah, I think maybe he's just trying to kind of test him out.
Was he playing Ramsdale today because he's on loan from Brentford?
No, he was allowed to play.
Because Raya's on loan from Brentford? Oh, he's allowed to play?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Arteta confirmed it.
Raya, but yeah. Okay.
Arteta confirmed it. He was allowed to play in this match. But yeah, Ramsdale played.
Okay. I was just curious. Now, you actually thought, I don't know if you still hold this opinion, but you thought at the time that the first Spurs goal was born out of a Raya mistake. Because when Porro had that deep cross that he kind of scooped out, and you kind of thought that passage of play started because of a mistake. So
I just think, and obviously I'm not a goalkeeper, I'm not a professional player, so maybe my mindset is completely naive, but I thought, one, maybe he could have caught it, but that's the more outrageous comment. I think, you know, patting it away is probably what every goalkeeper ever is going to do. I think when you're having to reach that far, you have to try and hit it out for a corner because there's no way you can generate enough power to get it anywhere. And of course, it falls straight to a Tottenham player. So I was a little upset with that decision. I didn't think it was the right decision. I don't think it's necessarily the wrong decision either. Like, it could have easily fallen to an Arsenal player who then clears it, but that's not what happened. So,
I mean, either way, if it hits out for a corner, that's still a goal scoring opportunity for Tottenham.
Yes, but it's not, I don't know.
But it could have easily.
The thing is, it fell right to Brendan Johnson, who should have scored.
Yeah.
Like,
It also, that type of, deflection of a cross coming in, that also could have easily, you just said, it could have easily gone to an Arsenal player.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I would have bet on the corner there, but.
Yeah, because Spurs were crap from corners in this game, too. We look actually crap from corners most of the time right now, which is disappointing considering we were so good at them last season, but. Yeah.
The Madison effect.
Maybe, but also our set piece coach left in the summer, which is a bummer.
Where did he go?
That's a great question. I have no idea. I don't know if he went anywhere. I think because Conte still hasn't gone anywhere either. And I think he was semi-attached to the Conte coaching staff.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% sure. But I don't think I have anything else on the derby.
I have a few more notes, but they're quick. I'll just kind of fly through them. You may disagree. I actually thought the Havertz introduction at halftime at least balanced our midfield a little better. I didn't really like Vieira starting in this game.
Vieira had a tough game, I'll say that.
Yeah. I think also with the attack, with the injuries we currently have, as much as I love Nketiah, I think I would rather have, if my options are for wingers, Reece Nelson and Jesus, and my striker options are Jesus and Nketiah, I think I would rather have Reece Nelson at winger and Jesus at striker rather than Nketiah and Jesus. I just think it's more balanced. I think Reece Nelson is proving he's all right. So I would prefer to see that at least until Trossard or Martinelli is back. Although obviously now Saka is going to be out for, I think, just 1 week, but we'll see what happens there. Yeah, and that was my last note. The other thing I had written down, I already kind of touched on, and it was that Arteta after the game, this was more of just like a, I'm happy that this is how Arsenal fans and the team collectively feel, because it shows where we are in the rebuild, is that we all feel like we lost points, which I think is doing Tottenham a disservice, because they played really well. And like both of us have said, a draw is most likely deserved. It's most likely when you balance every mistake, balance everything that went wrong and went right, you know, probably becomes a draw. But I think the collective feeling, at least on the Arsenal side, is that we lost points. And I think that's good. I think we should feel like that any game we drop points, because we need to be shooting to win every game. So I'm actually kind of happy in retrospect that we feel that way, at least. But yeah, that's kind of the last thing I had noted down.
Yeah, it's a good point too, because I think, especially with how far Arsenal are along in the rebuild, like Spurs kind of, some Spurs fans have said this, but I don't really feel like we lost points, especially at the Emirates. If that was at home, I would think I would feel a little bit differently, but considering the fact that we never win at the Emirates, I think we've won there once in the last 30 years. Like, I think I feel like it was a point gained rather than 2 points lost. So
I definitely feel sometimes in a North London derby, the teams are kind of prone to weird blips and maybe not playing up to par as usual, just because of the event. But both of us have big games coming up. I think y'all have Liverpool this weekend, and we have City, not this weekend, but the next. So I actually think those games are going to be bigger indicators of where each team is going to finish in the season, just because you kind of remove the luster of the North London derby from it. And it's just a game against a top team. Right. So I think those might be better indicators.
Who does Arsenal have this weekend, by the way?
Bournemouth.
Okay. Okay. I think that'll just about wrap up our North London derby discussion, which of course probably now has taken up the bulk of the runtime of the show, but I'm going to slide over to Ethan and to discuss what I think is fair to say snooze fest.
Well, Reese can tell you my thoughts that I couldn't tell you anything that happened in this game. I literally looked at him and I was like, I feel like I didn't just watch 90 minutes of football. The only things that I could like barely remember is that Johnston made a bunch of saves and I can't remember now. I just blanked because I was trying to think of the other thing I was thinking about. Oh, Edouard got hurt and he's been our main goal scorer this season so far. I'll spend more time talking about we played United yesterday in the Carabao Cup and lost 3-0. We played more of a second team, brought in a lot of players who don't usually play, like Riedewald, who actually ended up looking good. Holding got his first Palace start. And then Dean Henderson got his first start and then proceeded to get injured in like 18 minutes. And so all of that money spent on a backup keeper has just gone to the wayside. I don't know how long he'll be out, but, you know, going back to Riedewald, he also got hurt. I think at the end of the game. So right now we're just dealing with a bunch of injuries and we just don't have the quality to, I believe, you know, even go up against, you know, it was United. Yeah, they've been kind of shaky, but I think they still on the day have a lot better players than we do. So it makes me worry for these games that we've got against like the teams that are around us in the league soon. So here's the full injury list right now. It's Henderson, Ferguson, who, Jesus Christ, he's been injured the whole time he's been here. So that's no surprise. James Tompkins, who doesn't start anyway. Jefferson Lerma, who's been very important to the team. Riedewald, who would have been our next person to have in the team if we had another midfielder get injured. Ahamada is injured, who would come off the bench. Olise had another setback injury, so he'll still be injured. Franco won't be back till after the international break. And then now we have Edouard. And so I basically just listed like a good chunk of the first team out.
That's like a starting 11.
Yeah. And a lot of these players that I mentioned that are not in the starting 11 are players that either come off the bench or would cover for other people in these areas. So what is going on? The amount
of
time.
It's the Leicester curse. I think all of our teams except for Leicester are dealing with, you know, quite a few injuries.
Yeah. Callum Doyle's out for the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one though.
Yeah, because we've had 50 in three.
That's what I'm saying.
He's saying he passed it all over to us.
Good. To have fun with it.
But I'm worried about Roy Hodgson because, you know, he missed last game because he was sick. And I am starting to think that it's like the job that he's taken is like causing him sickness because he's literally
fucking 80.
Well, I'm just saying he's had to come out like multiple times saying he doesn't have the squad to do what he wants to do. Like he would like to focus on the cup runs, but he can't because he don't have anyone good enough to put forth. And, you know, when we have to basically play our whole first team who is not injured, it's basically running them so tired. Like, so I saw someone say that Tyreek Mitchell has played like every game, like Carabao Cup, FA Cup, Premier League for the time he's been like, he became a starter. So it's just like, we're lacking in so many numbers. And it's just like the amount of times that Roy Hodgson has had to come out and say that we just don't have the players is ridiculous because we saw what he could do with the amount of players he had when he was hired last season, midway through. So it's disappointing. And I still have to talk about this. It's the amount of players or not players, the amount of fans who are complaining about like other people complaining, like, they're like, you should be happy that we're still in the Premier League. And, you know, it's better to be safe and remain in the Premier League than to be ambitious. And I'm like, it's not, I would, you know, they bring up examples like Stoke and West Brom who come up and then go down like later. And it's like, you're not even realizing the fact that teams like Nottingham Forest are going out and building a better team than ours. And we've been here for so long. They've only been here for, I think this is their second season now. It's like, and you know, what's the point of being in the Premier League if we're not going to be ambitious? The whole point is to win the whole thing. Am I expecting to win the whole thing? Probably not. But we need to be pushing up into the top half. We've been achieving the same amount of, you know, finishes every season. And it's getting to the point where, like, you know, even though there are a lot of teams worse than us, that like we shouldn't just be comfortable with this. It's getting ridiculous. And you could see these bags under my fucking eyes because I'm fucking tired of it. It's ridiculous.
I've never heard of an injury-prone goalkeeper, but it seems like Dean Henderson has managed to achieve it.
Whenever he got injured, I couldn't believe that. I was like, we literally could have used that $20 million to like funnel that into someone who we need. And I just watched him go off injured after 18 minutes. He didn't really do anything. So, oh my God. Just talking about it gets me so fucking frustrated. It's like we're going to get away with it again because I think there's a lot worse teams, but I get so fed up with people saying that we need to be happy with just being in the Premier League. I absolutely hate that because the amount of teams that have, like, you know, West Ham won a fucking trophy because they're ambitious. Brighton are amazing now, and I hate saying that, but it's just they're so well run and they have this better model, and it's getting ridiculous. I'm so tired of reiterating it, and I'm tired of people being so brain dead to the fact that they just think we need just to at least stay in the Premier League when there's no ambition.
I think if it was last season, y'all would be pushing dangerously close to where we were pushing. But I think this year, the bottom is significantly worse than it was last season.
Yeah, which is why we're going to get away with that again. And we're going to do the same shit next season. So,
because last season was like first season, y'all showed some-ish level of ambition. Some.
Yeah.
And the first half of the season, it like was promising. And then just kind of fizzled off in the second half.
Yeah, I think Viera's tenure has done some damage in that department, actually, because I agree with everything you're saying. I think maybe if I'm trying to think from an ownership standpoint and put myself in the shoes of, I don't want to be ambitious, you know, the example you give to that argument, right, is, well, we hired Viera. He's this young, exciting manager. We've given him funds. He signed a bunch of players. And then he didn't do that well. And so, and I agree with what you're saying. I just think that tenure has done some damage from that standpoint, because, you know, the club can kind of come back and say, well, we did try and be ambitious and it didn't work.
Well, to that, I think, you know, obviously Viera, you know, he's a young manager and he's got a style that he wants to do, but he just hasn't been a manager for that long. So I think if we had, you know, we had tried, we had everything that we invested into this team and we had a more experienced manager with Roy Hodgson. Is he my ideal candidate? No, not really. But he had this, Roy Hodgson had a good team to work with, and he was able to get results because he's got a good style and he's got experience. So
I think
what you're saying.
Well, I think even to back up what Ethan's saying, like there is a big difference between like, yeah, Vieira was somewhat of a progressive manager and it didn't work out, so we're going to go back to someone more conservative, but not someone more conservative who's there for the third stint at the club, like, or second, I don't remember, but
second.
Like, I think it's just crazy. One of the things that Postecoglou talked about so much when he came in at Spurs is like, yeah, we're going to make changes that don't necessarily need to be made, but nothing's going to change if you don't change it. And so I think it's crazy that they've gone back again. Not to say that Roy Hodgson is a bad manager. I mean, obviously he's not. And I think bringing him in at the end of last season to shore things up is fine. But then not going out, and even if you want to stay a more conservative style, not just bringing in someone new, a new voice in the dressing room, a new ideas, new concepts. Maybe he has some ideas for new players. Just, I think it's crazy. I think it's like Stockholm syndroming yourself with Roy Hodgson. Like, it's,
there definitely has to be a medium. Like, I think the saying Vieira, you know, we were ambitious but it didn't work, is fine. But then if you want to get someone experienced, you know, get someone experienced that can also be progressive and apparently doesn't coach attacking in training sessions and whatever Townsend was saying. Townsend said that, by the way, in the Arsenal Palace game. He said attacking isn't really a focus in training for Roy Hodgson, which makes sense. And I think defensively you'll have a great structure, but there has to be some kind of medium there.
Yeah. It's a mess. And the thing that's the most annoying is that, you know, every season our chairman just says, you know, and it's quoted a lot on Twitter recently, is that, oh, we're going to take this club to the next level. And I was like, you can't, you saying that is not, it's not lining up with your actions. We knew Zaha was going to leave and you've sat there and brought in Franca, but, you know, obviously it's a very big gamble. And, you know, you can bring up the fact that we don't sell a lot of players. I think I would be okay with, you know, having to ship out a few players to bring in some money. You know, we've had some offers for our talent. But I think it also includes the fact that, you know, we're just not good. You know, we will do whatever to secure a player. And the fact that we put in a release clause for Elise for like 25 million or something like that, or whatever it was. But I think we just need to find a way to bring in some more money. And deal with the fact that we're going to have to sell some of these players and you know, keep rebuilding. And I think we're good scouter. We got good scouts in the system. And so we can find replacements. So
the issue, like you said, though, is y'all don't have the numbers currently.
Yeah.
So if you have to sign, I mean, I think it's like a great thought that you can sell a player and then use the funds to buy a new one. But realistically, what would have to happen is sell two or three to buy a new one. And then, yep, you know, you're down even more players. So I definitely think it's a tough position for the club to be in, for sure.
I want to bring something up that was brought to my attention because I have started a Crystal Palace career mode in honor of Ethan on FC 24.
Yeah, bring him in.
FIFA 24, as it was formerly known. Yeah. And I was looking at this on the game and I went to check to see if this is real. And this is real. This is from Transfermarkt. This is a list of players whose contract is expiring this summer. Jeffrey Schlupp, Jordan Ayew, Will Hughes, Jairo Riedewald, Nathaniel Klein, Joel Ward, Nathan Ferguson, James Tompkins, Remy Matthews. So that is, again, like not 8 or 9 players that have been at the club for quite some time and represent a large portion of the sort of stagnation of the club. At this point, like, how feasible is it to say, like, just let those contracts expire, like, and just go out and try to rebuild the squad from scratch? And you don't even have to, like, you don't even have to do what Forrest did and spend $400 gajillion. Right. Like, you could just make some, you know, smart signings or maybe bring some people in from the academy or what. But how feasible do you think that is?
It's, I think that we do need to make it happen because, you know, we even did it this before the season started. We gave Schlupp and, you know, Ward new contracts, and you know, I think they could be fine if we brought them on the bench, but they're starting. That's the thing. And I've been a fan of him at one point because he would come on and be a super sub and score. But like, he just has no purpose in the team anymore. Schlupp was one of the big reasons why we just didn't look good this weekend. And dealing with players like that is like, it's ridiculous that they're still getting in the team. And so I don't know. It's one big mess right now, just with all these injuries and whatnot. And I'm sure we'll do okay going forward, but with, you know, with the other teams in the league and how they're doing right now. But it's just so frustrating to, you know, constantly think, oh, we're going to do better, and, you know, be told that it's going to be different. We're going to take it to the next level, only for it to regress and get worse. And eventually I'm afraid that it's going to lead to the worst relegation.
All right. Any other thoughts on Palace, Ethan?
No, I need wine.
Okay. Let's move along. I kind of want to brush over this next fixture in the interest of time. I'd written down to talk about Luton and Wolves, just because we haven't talked about Luton yet. Since they've been in the Premier League, I think there's a lot to be made about the fact that, you know, people are predicting them to break Derby's record and to be the worst team ever. I think Wolves are almost as bad, if not as bad as they are, because this was, I mean,
think worse.
Yeah. I mean, Luton at least showed some promising play, some good tactical ideas from their wingbacks. Like,
I mean, Luton will be upset not to win this game. They should have.
100
by
million.
By a large margin.
Percent. Yeah. Yeah, and I think just even taking the red card out of it, which, by the way, shout out to, what is his name, Jean-Rickner Belgard, who impressed on his debut against Liverpool and then immediately gets sent off for a very strange patch of play where he kicks out at Tom Lockyer on the ground. I would be shocked if Wolves finish any higher than 20th. I'm going to be 100% honest, because they are terrible.
Yeah, they're really bad.
So
they're just really bad.
Okay. Well, another candidate for 20th, by the way, got smashed for 8 this weekend. Against Newcastle.
I had something to say, actually. Before. Luton. So I saw that they had only scored 3 goals so far this season. You know, considering that, you know, I'm sure they've had some tough teams to play against and it's still only a few games in. But out of the 3, 2 of those have been penalties. Now, a goal's a goal, but I'm afraid they might get too reliant on that. Not to say that that's not a bad strategy, but they need to figure out real soon about their attack.
Yeah. I will say in this game, and it may just be because Wolves are crap, but if they were slightly more clinical, they could have had like 4 goals from open play. So maybe that sticks around. I highly doubt it. I think it's more from Wolves being bad, but Luton was actually playing some decent attacking football. They just couldn't finish.
They did also get dumped out of the Carabao Cup by 10-man Exeter City this week.
Yeah, that's why I think it's more Wolves being bad.
Yeah, which again, they probably rotated. I'm sure they did, because they have a huge fixture against Everton coming up this weekend, which is a relegation 6-pointer if ever I've seen one. So yeah, they need to get a win there. They need to do something. Otherwise, I'm going to start being concerned, because if they don't beat the likes of Everton, Wolves, etc., they're surely not going to beat teams of better quality than that. So, and after that, I think they have like in succession, I think they have like Spurs. It's Spurs, Man City, Liverpool, and someone else, like all in a row. And I think like they're, well, knock on wood that they don't fucking beat Spurs, but they're probably not going to get anything from any of those games. So they need to win against Everton this weekend.
Anyway.
Yeah, like I was mentioning, almost another record tying affair with Sheffield United getting absolutely destroyed by Newcastle. And it's funny, because I saw some Newcastle fans complaining on Twitter that the team sheet was not very attacking. And I mean, I think they're right. I just think that all the stars aligned for them on the day.
This was fantastic for my fantasy team, by the way,
yeah,
because I was almost 30 points behind Gage going into the weekend, and I had a 96-pointer. And
I have Botman on the bench.
I'm up to first, baby. I leapfrogged 2 people, including Gage, up to first place. And I didn't even have any attackers. I have 2 Newcastle defenders. It just happens to be Botman, who clean sheet and scored, and Trippier, who clean sheet and 2 assists. So I got so many points.
Bobman's smoking weed on the bench for me, and I have Udogie in playing against Arsenal because I didn't look at the damn fixtures. And yeah, so Bobman 15 points going to rot on the bench, and Udogie with a fat zero against Arsenal. So, shame for me.
8-0, man. That's crazy.
I almost think it's entirely mental because
yeah,
I think you're a newly promoted side and you go down 3-0, I think you just turn off. Because at that point, you're 3-0 down to Newcastle, who are a Champions League team, and your newly promoted Sheffield. Like, what's that? Like, there's no way you're coming back. And I know you should try and stay positive, try and come back, but just realistically, there's no way. You're Sheffield United. You're not coming back when you're 3-0 down in the first half. So I think the rest of the goals are kind of just them not playing football.
Yeah. What happened when we were all like watching it? Like, we like turned it off after 3-0 and then like started playing like FIFA 12 or something, and then saw that it was like 7-0 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy how that could happen. And that's coming from someone who's seen a 7-0 against his own team. So.
And Reese, also, you mentioned the mental thing. Like, I also think coming off of last weekend is so damaging for them too, because you have to remember they were winning against Spurs in the 98th minute and lost the game.
Yeah.
Like, so that's got to be so, and yes, I'm just having an excuse to bring it up, but at the same time, it's like, they are coming off the back of one of the most like probably soul crushing weeks ever.
Yeah.
And now you're coming up against a Champions League team. You're down 3-0 immediately. Now you've lost 8-0. How do you respond next weekend? I mean, how do you not feel downtrodden after something like that?
Combine the context of the Tottenham game with the fact that I actually think Newcastle's first goal was against the run of play. Sheffield could have scored and probably should have in like the second minute of the game.
Yeah.
And had a couple other high quality chances right after that. And then Newcastle score from just the crazy Anthony Gordon weird handball. Was it out of play? Was it not out of play? Assist.
United fans in the mud.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. I'm so happy it stood because it's funny. But
yeah, I think we were actually sitting there eating breakfast, and I was like, I shouted at the TV. I was like, I cannot believe that goal stood. Like, not because it was out of play, but because he clearly handles it right before he crosses it. But anyway, I mean, I obviously didn't change the impact of the game that much because Sheffield United were going to lose that game either way. Also worth mentioning that they were without Ollie McBurnie through suspension. So he is somebody who wins a lot of aerial duels for them, and maybe next week he'll be back and be able to influence them. They have West Ham on the weekend, so, I mean, could be a good back-to-earth moment in terms of not playing one of the big boys, I guess. I mean, well, not playing Spurs and then one of the big boys, if I can disparage my own team for the moment. But I think we're one of the big boys again, fingers crossed. So anyway, I think that is all we have in terms of the match reviews for the Premier League. I did want to throw it over to Josh for our weekly Leicester watch.
Oh, we're back top of the Championship. Preston drew this weekend. I already mentioned we played Bristol. If you haven't seen it, go look at Vardy's penalty from the game.
Oh,
absolutely smashed it into the top corner.
And then laid out his dick in front of Bristol fans.
Pitch to go celebrate in front of the Bristol fans.
I love to see that.
Vardy fashion, just shithoused it up. It was hilarious.
Does he hate Bristol fans? Like, what was the deal? Was he just doing it to be a shithouse?
We were in the Championship against Bristol. And it's just like a standing thing. He also just likes to fuck with other teams. Like,
when
he
scores against
Palace, when he does the equal thing.
God damn it.
Or like when we played Wolves, like he would do the howl. Just like, I think he just likes winding up the fans. And then we played Liverpool today. It looked promising because McAteer scored in the third minute, and then we lost 3-1. Which I'm not upset about. I didn't really want to stay in the cup anyway because we need to win the championship. My train of thought just like slammed the brakes for a second. We have gone out against Liverpool in the Carabao Cup 3 of the last 4 seasons. And I really am tired of playing them in the Carabao Cup. It's miserable.
How does it feel to be scored against by SpongeBob?
I don't even know. Like some musician just like dunked on me with his tentacles.
What are you saying?
Okay.
What did you just say?
I think he's trying to make a Squidward joke, but I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, because he plays the clarinet.
I thought that's what you said, but I was like,
I don't know. I was not prepared for any SpongeBob SquarePants jokes tonight. I saw it. It was like
you're SpongeBob the first of all of us to be scored against by SpongeBob, so I was just, you know, curious. But yeah, that's me knocking on wood for next weekend because we're playing them. So hopefully, yeah. SpongeBob doesn't score.
SpongeBob hat trick incoming.
Yeah, no doubt.
SpongeBob being supposed live for those who just don't know the tweet.
Yeah.
Well, it's because his name is like technically pronounced Shabashly or whatever. Shabashly. Yeah. And so some guy on, I don't even know who it was, but it was just fantastic, said SpongeBob on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, he just said it with the SZ, yeah. SpongeBob. Yeah.
SpongeBob.
So, yeah, good point, Ethan. I didn't even consider the fact. I feel like it's just exists in everyone's headcanon by now.
No, I love it, but some people probably like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and Josh, I'll say it again. It's happened. Right now, Casey McAteer is on Have a Bad Game Challenge Impossible mode.
He's amazing.
This kid is lighting it up.
I love it. It's great. Callum Doyle, I mentioned it earlier, is out for the year. It looks like James Justin is just going to play on the left, which he had done in the Premier League before. So as long as Pereira doesn't get bought in the winter, we're fine.
Or injured.
He's probably in a fucking midweek game in January. He's probably going to eat a two-footer to the knee and blow his knee apart.
His leg is still sliding on the ground. Look out.
Yeah, his leg is just going to fall off.
Okay, guy. At this point.
It's awful.
All right, fellas, let's wrap it up and switch over to album/jersey of the week. I don't care who goes first, but I have a hair in my mouth and I don't want to look weird getting it out. So I'm going to go off camera for the moment.
Josh, you go first.
So the Rugby World Cup is happening right now. So if
anyone
has been watching games on Peacock, you have probably seen a Rugby World Cup ad. So I have a 2019 Rugby World Cup Ireland jersey.
Yeah, let's go.
It's like very comfortable. And the logo is amazing. So it's like Mount Fiji. And it's got the little like Japanese red dot in the back. And it's got like, you can't really see it in the camera, but it's got like a blue to white sky gradient on it. It's just a nice jersey.
I haven't been watching it, but like I had seen the clip of, who did they just play recently that they beat?
I don't know. I have been watching the games I've been able to, and I'll probably start keeping up with them, I guess, up to the knockout stages.
I want to say it was like South Africa or something, but they just beat someone big. And I thought this was so cool. The fans were like belting Zombie by the Cranberries. And I thought that was so cool because the Cranberries are an Irish band. Yeah. So I thought that was so cool. And it was, see, I feel like fans of Scotland international teams and Irish international teams are always loud in voice. Not to say that England's not, but, you know.
It's the rugby culture.
Right. Their most recent win was South Africa. You're right.
Yeah. I always think of the Scotland and England game where Lee Griffiths belts two free kicks in the last minute and Scotland fans just go berserk. So
he was a mainstay in career mode after that for the next year.
I go back to that all the time just because of how crazy that is.
That's like number one limbs maybe ever.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But no, so I didn't see the game, but just seeing the Irish fans go crazy like that was awesome. So maybe I'll keep an eye on it.
Moment the Portugal made their first World Cup and got scored their first try ever. And the guy who scored, it's also their captain. He had like a really like nice like interview at the end. He was like talking about like trying to get kids to play rugby, and which is not going to happen because Ronaldo is a thing.
Yeah.
No, I definitely think rugby's cool, and I wish I was more into it. So I might have to force myself.
Also, a random sport alert: the T20 Cricket World Cup is happening in October. I highly recommend just flip a game on. It is nice background noise. It's like baseball. And no.
Yeah, I was going to say, I will not.
All right. All right. Do the album. So I just turned 23 recently. And, you know, the thing that I ask for every year is records because it's easy and I love them so much. So I have a bunch of new records that I can use for album of the weeks now. This was one of the first ones I listened to from The Hall this last birthday a few days ago. And I'm glad I finally got it. It's The Low End Theory by A Tribe Called Quest. And it is great. I'm a big fan of older rap, hip hop, whatever say you. Excursions, Check the Rhyme, Jazz, We've Got It. And Scenario might be like one of my favorite rap songs, if not like maybe top two. This is great. And I've definitely enjoyed getting into the older hip hop stuff.
I actually listened to Check the Rhyme today in the car.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Yet another topical pick by you of something I've listened to recently.
Yeah. I'm just in your brain all the time.
So. You are, dude.
Yeah. But that's great. I love Scenario so much. It's got a lot of funny lines, but it just goes hard. So.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite rap lines of all time is from Check the Rhyme when he says, "Here's a funky introduction of how nice I am." It's just a hilarious thing to say in a rap song.
Yeah.
But
yeah, not to say that new rap is not good, but I feel like they just come up with a lot of cool or like things to go off of back in the day. Cooler lines. But then again, I don't listen to too much rap these days, so I can't speak for it. But
all right, fellas, let's bring things to a close. So we want to say a big thanks to the listeners for coming along with us again. We hope you enjoyed all of our North London Derby chat and Ethan's you know, exposure of his mental state, especially about Crystal Palace. and yeah, I'm going to say thanks to the guys for joining me again. So thanks, Reese.
Yep. Thanks for coming over and watching the game and for hosting.
Absolutely. And Ethan as well, belated happy birthday once again. And your present has not even shipped from the warehouse. So we're still waiting on it, but we have bought it. So yeah,
I appreciate the gift of friendship. That's all I need from y'all. So
heartfelt. Yeah. So Josh as well, thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. And the listeners, of course. Oh, you know what? I didn't mention this last week and Reese tried to sneak it in at the end. But we need to talk about the website. So Reese, I'll pass it over to you to talk about that quick.
Yeah, we have a website. It's kind of bare bones right now. It's kind of just a homepage that directs you to all of our socials and our most recent YouTube video. But it looks pretty cool. And it is slapcastpl.com. Yes? Yes.
Yes.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah, check it out. Slapcastpl.com. Email us if you want at podcast@slapcastpl.com. We do have a domain. Of course, slapcastpl. Pretty much on every social media platform. So if you're looking for us, you can find us there. Trying to keep the brand similar. So we're going with SlapcastPL for everything. Yeah, once again, thanks for joining us on this weekly excursion. We hope you're all staying safe, staying healthy, enjoying the Premier League. And it's goodbye from us.